saved me of this. The Agel, we could come back, you know, that's,
if we don't do it today, we could do that
next, you know, in the coming weeks. It's not, because after that you're getting into the parashiyos, you know, with the building the Mishkan and all of that, you know, which is, like I said, that's a separate study. I'm not really ready to take up questions on that.
But I'll just leave it in a general. I'll leave that question in general. Perhaps we'll take it up more specific as we get into the Yagel.
That's really challenging. Yeah. And the role of Aaron. Maybe next Friday we'll take up the Yagel. I mean, I've been studying that for years. I want to review certain things. So that I feel we could you know, do some stuff on. But there's many challenging questions over there. And so I think the whole role of Aaron is very, very hard to understand. That the Aaron, you know, was involved in it. And it seems, at least superficially, that he gave in to the will of the people, which has to do with Avodah Zarah. Yahar Gval Yavor. And, you know, the Mepharshim, the Ramban, the Ibn Ezra, they all take this up. You see, Moshe rebuked him, but then he just explains, and that's it. It just seems like Moshe accepted his explanation. But,
also, Moshe's tefillah seems strange.
I'm sorry?
Moshe's tefillah seems hard to understand.
Moshe's tefillah, what, that Lama Yom Mitzrayim?
The one about the Schus Avos.
The Schus Avos.
Seems hard to understand, yeah, because Moshe seems to treat it like it's like a guarantee.
Well, okay.
In other words,
you're right. The story of I'm sorry for interrupting, but the story, you're correct. The story of the Egel has many elements to it. It's almost every aspect of it is a problem. The breaking of the luchos, the fact that that too is a problem, because it seems that Moshe Rabbeinu was informed by God before he came down, of what had gone, you know, Saru Maher Min Adarach Asher Tivisim Asalahem Egel Masecha. So then, I'm sorry, then Moshe went down with the Luchos. So even after he knew what had taken place, he went down with the Luchos. Then he marches back to the camp and he sees the revelry and what's going on, and then he breaks the Luchos. So that itself is a huge question. What right did Moshe have to break the Luchos? And what right? I mean, what right did he have to do so? I mean, today, if a guy would suggest that, they'd be crazy, you know, like the Luchos, that's the Ksumim B'Yetzbalokim, so to speak. And it was God's will that they be given that the Aseret HaDibros. And yet he broke them. And Chazal say that God said to him, Yashkoch Shashibarta. God gave me Yashkoch. So acting independently, he did the right thing. But I mean, so why did God give him the Luchos to bring them down? You know, like, what did he discover when he came down that he didn't know when God had informed him? So there's many, many questions over here. It's up to, you know, like, what specific... All right, I mean, what specific question? I can't do the whole Ego story today. There's a lot of different angles, as I said. Mordechai's question, what provoked it? It's very difficult for us to understand. This is after the Yetzias Mitzrayim, this is after the Aseret HaDibros, and even after the Aseret HaDibros again, God, the main warning in the Aseret HaDibros, then afterwards, you know, Atem Re'isem, you've seen Lo Sasa Niti, it seems to be repetitious, but it's again, everything has to do with avoiding Avodah Zarah. That's the most important thing of all. That's the foundation of foundations. And here it's 40 days later. So Moshe was a little bit late. So it triggers off a whole panic. And as I said, the role of Aaron. What happened over there? And, you know, the subsequent, and the tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Because God was prepared to destroy Klal Yisrael. So there's a lot of questions. And then you have Yosef's question about the counting. You guys have to decide. What do you, you know, we can only do one thing today. Let's put it that way. Maybe I'll do. Maybe I'll leave the. I think that as far as the Egel is concerned, that's something. I don't know to what extent you've researched it. I think it would not be a bad idea in preparation for this to go through. I mean, of course, the Rashis, but there's Ramban.
Right.
There's Ramban's there. He takes up there's a lengthy Ramban with regard to the whole issue of Aharon. And he gives a lot, you know, like, it goes a long way to explaining.
Well, maybe we could do that during, like, Vayakal and Pekudei. We could do it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Of course, in Vayakal and Pekudei, I don't think I'm going to find too much. So, but the angle, there's plenty. I don't know. I mean, it may take us a couple of sessions if you want to deal, you know, depending on how much we want to deal with. So, let's see for today. All right, you guys research that. There's Ramban. There's also an Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra seems to be going pretty much like the Ramban, but the Ibn Ezra is much harder to decipher, more cryptic. But look, I'll be satisfied if you do the Ramban. As far as the Indian of counting, right? Let's see if we could. I have a general explanation. That's all I can offer today. A general explanation as to what the problem is. Okay? Because I gave a talk on this last year, my shul. And I don't remember the specifics or the sources, but I just remember the general idea, so that's why I'll do the best that I can. Does anybody have any thoughts on the matter?
Fine, Howard.
Yeah, the Ayin Hara.
Yeah, they're Gemaras.
I mean, this particular, with regard to counting, I'm saying. Not Ayin Hara in general. I'm not asking about that. Ayin Hara in general.
The Yimei David.
What?
The Yimei David.
With regard to counting.
Yeah, the
with regard to, in general, we've said the Ayin Hara is a natural type of a phenomenon, psychological.
The only
it's reflective of it's a certain attitude. Yeah, go ahead.
The one last quote is in the Yemei David. It's a fascinating case.
Hmm?
Where 70,000 people died because they counted them.
I know. So what, do you have an explanation to offer?
Explanation? No, but that's the only case I can think of.
I know, but I'm trying to explain. What I'm trying to do is to explain. Let me get my Tanakh. I need a Tanakh. Let me just find it in Tanakh. Any Tanakh experts over there? In Shoftim? The story of Gidon?
Yeah, what about Gidon?
Oh, here it is! Isn't this... This can't be coincidence. I just opened up the Tanakh and turned it right to the page.
Must be Ashkafa.
Huh?
Must be the Ashkafa.
Something's happening over here, Fred.
Yeah, but that wasn't the Indian. What about the story of Gidon right now?
I'm sorry, what?
What about the story of Gidon?
I'm just trying to... I got the general spot. Hold it. Yeah, the story of Gidon, in general, if you know the story of, you know, in the Shoftim. I don't know to what extent you guys have studied Shoftim, but that was the period of history right after the entry into the land. It starts with Yoshua. He was the first Shofet. That was before that he had a king. And, I mean, if you read the book of Shoftim, it doesn't seem to be a very good time, good period of history in terms of the level of the people. I'm sorry? In general, it seems that my interpretation, I gave shiur on this years and years ago. I haven't done it in a long time. I had like, in the 80s, I gave shiur on Tanakh. But it would seem that the underlying failure was to get rid of the, that was, the command was to get rid of all of the other nations that inhabited the land, lest they fall into the trap of Avodah Zarah. And at a certain point in time, it would seem that people got tired and they stopped fighting and they allowed them to live in the land. And they were milkud, so to speak. They were ensnared in Avodah Zarah. That was a big chait of that period. So the pattern seems to be, if you read the book of Shoftim, the pattern seems to be that God brought punishments upon them. You know, the neighboring powers would afflict them until the Jews would call out to God, and then they'd cry out to God, and then one way or another, I mean, you know, the Shoftim, the hero, would appear, and the Jews would unite around him, and he'd defeat the enemy, and for a time the Jews would be, you know, under the control of Torah, and then they'd slack off, and then you see, it's a recurring pattern. That's the way the book is. You reach out to them. Like, you know, all the various Shoftim, Shimshon HaGibor, and who was Ehud, you know, Gidon, Yiftach HaGiladi,
Barak
and Devorah. Yeah, you know, like, that's the way it is. That's the general pattern of the book. Okay? So one of the Shoftim is Gidon. I'm not really interested in going into the particularity. I just want to... I think that there's something in the story of Gideon that illustrates the point that I'm trying to make about counting. Okay? Now, the way that the conclusion I arrived at last year was that there are two things that are wrong about counting the Jews. Counting entails two issues. The story of Gideon, take a look. I think it's pretty obvious. Let me just... this would be in Shoftim, if you have Shoftim. Perek Vav. If you have the one-volume Tanakh, it's, you know, yeah, whatever. There should be enough Tanakh to go around. I don't know how many guys are there. Okay, so I'm not going into the preliminaries, but, you know, Gideon got together an army to fight against the enemies. Okay? So if you take a look at Perek Zion, Vayashkim Yerubal Hu Gidon. Alright, that was Gidon. He was called Yerubal. V'cholam Asherita Vayachnu. It's a beautiful story. Vayachnu Alein Charod. Umachane Midyan Hayolo Mitzafon, we give us, so they were fighting against Midyan. Vayamar Hashem al Gidon, and God said to Gidon, Rava Am Asheritach. You had too many people. You gathered too many people. It's a very funny kind of story. Because generally speaking, when an army goes out to battle, you know, obviously you don't want too many people because it could be cumbersome, but you want a strong army. You'd rather rule. Yeah, I'm sorry, you'd rather err on the side of caution instead of taking too few troops. You know, you always take backup. But apparently, he said, Rav-a-am, Asher Itach. But it wasn't Rav too many from a military standpoint. Because the Pesuk says, Mikiti es Midyan biyadam, too much for me to give Midyan into their hands. You understand? It's a metaphysical problem. Ten Yisboil I Yisrael. Lest the Jews glorify themselves over me. Lamar saying, Yodi Hoshioli. So you see the problem over here? The problem in the existence of Klal Yisrael is that, and it's brought down in Devarim, that the real salvation of Klal Yisrael is only through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no other way. If they abandon HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they seek to be a nation like all the nations and use all the implements and use all the material and physical resources, even if they do so intelligently, they cannot win. Because that's part of the bris. That's how far it's a bris. And if you're made for the bris, then nothing but that's the kolos. Then you can have the tochacha, the kolos. That's it. It's a metaphysical reality. And there's no way that it can be altered. The only Yeshua for Klal Yisrael is ultimately through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, that's the problem you have today. That's the problem. I mean, you could see it. Look, I'm not a novi. I'm not the one that can point out that this is happening because of that. But you see the tremendous downfall in the state of Israel with all their superiority and the tremendous military victories of which they were and total physical power over the enemies around them, and they're just getting beaten and beaten and beaten. I mean, you can find something, a social, political observer can point out the mistakes that they're making, but they can't succeed. Obviously, when there's a downfall, you can always point. This is true. It's going to manifest itself in mistakes. It's not going to necessarily happen in a magical way. But, the whole combination of factors that's arrayed against them is just bringing them down. All right, look, I tomorrow the situation improves. You'll say that I was wrong. That's why I'm not basing myself on that. I'm just telling you that's a reality, and a chacham would recognize this. And he wouldn't try to, that's like the mapilim. He wouldn't try to go up against something which is an impossibility. For Klal Yisrael, or the Jewish people, to try and maintain themselves purely through the natural and the physical and abandon Torah would be to try and do the impossible. It's bound to failure, just like when Moshe warned the Mapilim. That was after the Meraglim. So they heard that you were not going to enter the land, so they insisted we're going to go up and we're going to fight. And Moshe said to them, no. And at least on the surface of them, they realized they were wrong and they should have had the courage and should fight for Kosh Baruch Hu and for the land, to glorify God, whatever. But Moshe said to them, no. And now, so you can't. The divine will is not there, and the Aaron is not going to go with you, and you're going to get defeated. So, that type of a phenomenon of just trying to force a certain situation, which is contrary to the terms of the existence, of Jewish existence, can't work. So here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, you see that there's a different rule that applies when the Jewish army goes out. The Jewish army goes out, it's going out with the koach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And God is saying, it's too much. You're going to take credit for the victory. The Ata Krona B'Yosnei Ha'am Lemar. And now, this is what you should order the people to do. Mi Yarei V'Chared, whoever is afraid. Whoever is afraid. Now, interesting, that's the question, because before they went out to war, they always had to, the Kohen always read the terms, that who returns from battle. And one of the returnees was the coward. But here, apparently, so what's the chiddush over here? But apparently it would mean that the guy's not a coward. A coward would mean someone that's so afraid that he's in a state of panic, he just can't go out. So he's willing to put up with the certain humiliation. And all the soldiers are gathered, and these people have to leave. So for somebody to leave, not because he had the vineyard or he just took a wife, etc., but simply because he's a Yarei V'Rachalevav. He can't bear it. He can't stand up to the fear of a war. So that's a big embarrassment. But nevertheless, So here I think it means that there's still a guy that's a Yarei V'Chare. He's not exempting himself. A lot of guys that go to war that don't plead that they're cowards doesn't mean to say that they're just as, there's different degrees. Some guys are much more confident and less fearful, and other guys are more fearful, but they're not cowards. They have to deal with it. Here it's saying, Miyari Bechari, whoever is fearful. Yesha V'Yisbar Meharagilad. You can leave. Whoever fears and trembles can leave. But Yesha V'Na'am Esrim U'Shnayim Elef. So 22,000 people left. The Aseret Allah from the Sharu. So you see, you had two groups. 10,000, that's an amazing thing. Because you're giving people an opportunity to return from the battlefield. Most people would want to grab a shot like that. But 10,000 people remained. Now, how do you feel? Put yourself in their position. 10,000 and all 22,000 guys at least, that's tremendously demoralizing. Tremendously demoralizing, because you get the feeling it's like these guys are leaving. 22,000, they must know something. We're crazy. What are we, suckers? No, but then really shows that these guys have tremendous confidence in the Yeshua. Okay, but that's not the reason why God engineered it. In other words, God, that's the result. The result is that you'll be left with the people that have the greatest amunah. But that's not why God. or gave the order. There's simply too many people. Vayom Hashem al Gidon, and Hashem said to Gidon, oh, to Amrav, still too many people. It's an amazing thing. In every other army, it's the contrary. You're trying to get more. Here, you're trying to get less. Horeid Osam el Amayim. You guys must have heard the story when you went to school, right? Yeshiva?
Yeah.
Yeah. To bring them to the water, the Estrafan al Hasham, and God will further, purify them, so to speak. To weed out the ones that weren't most appropriate. Mahayasha Yomer, Elecha Zeyelech, Itachu Yelech, Itach. Okay, so now he gives the test. The test was that they would bring him to the water for a drink, and anyone that would bow down on his knees would be would get down on his knees in order to not to worship, but in order to drink the water. But a guy that wouldn't get on his knees, a guy that would just lean over and lap some water with his tongue, that was the test. Okay? Basically, I think Rashi mentions, because that was a time of Avodah Zarah. So, apparently, it makes sense, those who are Nizar, who are very careful, would not get down on their knees. But those who were in the habit of doing it, for them the idea of getting down on their hands and knees was more natural, so to speak. But whatever, it represents that idea. Okay, that's still not tomorrow. I don't really care. That's not the most important thing. So what happened? So that's what he said. So So the overwhelming majority of these 10,000 got on their knees, and that's the way they drank the water. I'm not saying that they were over the Avodah Zarah, and I don't think that's what Russian means, but that was the idea behind the test. And 300 people who apparently were Nisar, which would make sense, that a person that he was Merachik himself. So a person who wants to merachik himself will never bow down, get on his knees for any kind of reason. It's a reminder to him of how serious this is. Okay? So now he's got 300 men. So that doesn't sound like much of an army. Down from, you had 32,000 at the beginning, right? Because 22,000 left in the first cut. So you had 32,000, down to 10,000, now you're down to 300. Vayom Hashem el Gidon, with the 300 men hamalachim. So you see that there was something, they were malachim, that they were free of any kind of a taint of Avodah Zarah. Oshia Eschem, I'll save you. Benasati es Midyan ziyadecha, and I'll put Midyan in your hands. V'chol ha'am yelchu ishlam kamo, and then each person will return to his place. Okay, so does anybody have any idea why I'm reading this? Like what the connection is? Well, see, I wanted to suggest...
The only thing I can think of is that, in other words, that story is trying to show you the idea that the power of Klal Yisrael doesn't rest in their numbers.
Very good.
But it rests in their relationship with Kadosh Baruch.
Exactly.
But that, so therefore, in this battle, in which Kadosh Baruch was really going to cause them to win, right?
Right.
To back Gidon. So it had to be shown that the reason they were successful was really coming from Kadosh Baruch
Hu. Right. And the emotion, but you see, that's 100% correct, but that's not a simple thing, because there's a very powerful emotion which takes over, that's the human egotism, to say, no, it's Kochi V'Otam Yodi. That it's my... And that's the problem we've always had, that the egotistical emotion of man to deny God and to take the credit. So the idea of a census, what's the whole idea of a census? Why did David take a census at that point in time? The idea of a census, when a person takes a census, is basically rooted in some type of a fear, some type of an insecurity. So, like a person counts his money. Like he gets nervous. There are tough times and problems. So he doesn't audit.
Well, 1 second. Couldn't you also, isn't it also because he could love them very much? Like Rashi says in some of the cases.
Who loved them?
The person counting. Like where Kadosh Baruch Hu counts, he wants to count as well.
Kadosh Baruch Hu is a different one. We're talking about the prohibition of the Jews. Excuse me, slow down. The prohibition of the Jews counting. The prohibition of the Jews. When the Jews begin to count, it's not because they love them very much. What do you have to count?
Well, 1 second. Rashi compares it to a case of Melech Basar Vadam, who like is who takes who.
No, he's only explaining why God at that point in time. Well, you're confusing two different things. There's two different elements in the count. The question is, what do we need to count for altogether? What's the purpose of a count in the first place? I mean, there is a. It means because God's a mana. Whenever there's a minui for something, the counting always has to be related to a Dvar Mitzvah. Otherwise, you can't have a count. That's part of the idea that I'm expounding upon. That the count, you see, the count of David was for practicality, for political, for military reasons, to derive a certain satisfaction that we're in a good situation. You know what I mean? Like we have the power, we can deal with it. That's the counting that is rooted in the emotional need to find security in the physical. The fact that we have 5 million Jews, we have 10 million Jews now in Israel in numbers. You see that emotion even now, like if how many people are living in Israel, how many immigrants, and we've built up from the nation of 2 million, now there's 5 million, as if the amount of people would make the difference in terms of the survival of Klal Yisrael. And you see, by the way, that's a very big preoccupation now. That, you know, like in America, there's tremendous assimilation. So all these different groups, which aren't, they don't care about Torah in the first place, so I don't know why they're concerned about the survival of the Jewish people. But they're always, it's a whole big thing now. You know, like all these birthright to Israel, because Israel became the Yeshua. You've got Israel, they'll, you know, recognize that they're Jews. Because if we keep, and also, I mean, obviously, it produces the biggest stupidity, because then they say, well, then we should recognize intermarriage, and we should convert the non-Jewish partners, that you'll be Jew, I mean, even though it's not a conversion. It's not Judaism. But I mean, like, that emotion that if we keep going at this rate, the Jewish people will disappear. It's funny, the only ones that are really concerned about this are the people that don't believe in Judaism in the first place. I don't see the point. But that idea that if we don't have sufficient numbers, then that the Jews could disappear from the face of the earth. I mean, I don't know. I always ask, how come I'm not worried about that? I'm not worried about that. And I think I care about Judaism. I think I care about the Jewish people. Because that's an absurdity. It's an absolute absurdity. The survival of the Jewish people, that's God's issue, so to speak. God's problem. We don't exist because of numbers. We exist because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you deny that, so then why do you want the Jewish people altogether? If you affirm that, then of course, I'm not saying we have to be involved in Kiruv. But when we're involved in Kiruv, it's not because we're saying if we don't do it, then we're going to lose all the Jews. There won't be any Jewish people left. That's not the reason. As if there was a comfortable amount, then we didn't have to be concerned, so then we could slack off on Kiruv. That's absurd. And Kiruv is, of course, that is how it's also, we have a chiyuv to teach Torah. Now, that's what Rashi is talking about, the whole need for a count altogether. That whenever the Jews are being counted, it's being counted because of their closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because of, it's got to be for some type of a purpose that is necessary in terms of Avodah Hashem. They're not just time to count. But as far as we're concerned, there's a difference between that type of account and between a count which is undertaken by the political rulers. Because there, the motivation, what you're doing is, you're changing the character of Klal Yisrael. The danger of a count is that it's an action which expresses a certain attitude, a certain philosophy, which is a distortion of the whole character of Klal Yisrael, and a serious distortion of Klal Yisrael. It's not, that's why there's a punishment attached to it. To the contrary, I can see the mita connected mita. I'm not dealing with the issues of justice injustice, but you see why there's a play, because it's mita connected mita. To the contrary, less numbers. Because you sought to gain a certain sense of confidence from numbers, and to the extent that you're doing that, you're taking the people away from God. You're saying it's another people, it's the people that succeed because of its physical powers. That's the whole warning in the verb. That, you'll say, Kochi v'otem yadi asli yitachayim azah. That's a very powerful danger. Now, that, I believe, is one of the problems. That's a serious problem. Now, to the extent, you see, apparently this is so serious that this idea that we have to constantly remember whenever there's a need for numbers, even for counting for a minion, but apparently that's, that carries through. That you do it in a derech of shinui. You do it, because the counting of a minion is not the real thing, that's not a census. And you would think you need a minion. So what's the problem? Why can't you count directly? But apparently, for whatever the minog, it's a minog and all that, it's based upon sources that this is such a significant thing, so that even when we have a legitimate reason to count, but we avoid the idea of counting. We avoid
that
the idea
sense.
Of counting. You do it directly.
Doesn't make sense.
Why?
Because when you're counting for a minion, there's a lot of differences. First of all, you're not counting all the Klal Yisrael. You know that there's, let's say...
I'm not going to... Look, you're not... Look, go through the sources as to where it's brought down. It's not a problem for me because it's not... The prohibition of counting doesn't start with minyan. That's not where it comes from. It comes from a different source. So for whatever reason it was brought down to keep this practice. See, I'm not saying that the problem originates in a minyan.
I'm just saying that
there's many things like that. That once you adopt a certain, like you saw in the case with the guys that didn't get on their hands and knees. That there's no risk of getting on your hands and knees to drink water. But since they're in that context, getting on your hands and knees was associated with a Vodazara. So then the people who were Nizar didn't even get on their hands and knees for water. So, I mean, that's not a problem.
So are you saying that you wouldn't count people for a minion directly?
What?
I asked Ray about that.
He said, I didn't explore the issue because logically I had the same problem you had. But he said it is brought down. It is brought down like that. I never really checked it through, but I mean, for the time being, leave it at that. That it's a, it's an outgrowth, so to speak. It's a sort of a chumrah.
Did we show him have this chumrah?
I don't know. I'm not really interested in that. That's not the shear. The shear is not a particular. I'm not interested in a particular thing that's going on. That you can look up. The issue that interests me is the whole idea of counting, of taking a census, and the fact that we continue to do so over here in this situation, so if that's what it was brought down, it's a minhag of the... it's correct. You should not count. Even it's brought down. But I never really explored the whole thing. However, I would say that the indirect counting, I understand, because if the point is to have a lesson that the Jews should not be counting under any circumstances, we should not engage in that, because of this danger. So that whenever you need a count, you do so in an indirect way to bring home this point. You see, because you have this conflict. I mean, there are certain times when you need to know the number. On the other hand, there's a danger of counting. So I wanted to say two things. The other idea I wanted to say was a simpler idea. And that is that the very act of counting is a expression of ownership. That is, a person, when a person takes a count, like he does an audit on his finances. So, this is what I have. This is mine. I have, I have $5 million. I have $10 million. It's the very fact that you do the counting is an expression of ownership. It's yours. And that's contrary to the whole idea of the Jewish people. He leave an Israel of Adam. Only God can count them. Nobody You see, nobody has the right to do anything which expresses any type of a ownership, so to speak. That this is just a natural people. This is my people. You know, like a leader or a government is proud that we have, you know, 100 million, 200 million, whatever, the Chinese, I don't know what you're talking about already. That type of a thing. The idea of counting, once you count, you're saying this belongs to you. It's yours. And that itself is a distortion of the whole idea of Klal Yisrael. It fits in with the other idea. These two ideas are connected to each other. The very act of counting, what are you counting? You're counting your own. You don't count somebody else's money. You shouldn't be anyways, and you're out. It's not your business. It's not yours. So you count your own. A person takes stock over his holdings, his portfolio. So whenever he does that, that's an expression, this is my portfolio. This is mine. He wants to know what he has in this world. So the same thing is true. He wants to know, but this is, you know, like every nation has a certain pride. See, that very pride, that nationalistic pride which is expressed in the numbers, is already a distortion. That's not Klal Yisrael. Because Klal Yisrael is not another nation which exists in order to provide a certain type of an ego gratification to the people. That's not what Klal Yisrael is. It's a completely different kind of an entity. We belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We don't, you see, it's a subtle point, but we don't have that element. There's no nationalistic gratification. It's not like you know, the French, they have their country, and the United States. That whole thing, I mean, I'm not getting into, I have to start thinking about that, because it's just like the Olympics. See, that's what the Olympics is all about. The Olympics is... They're all these different entities. They're all egos. They're all nationalistic. See, nationalism is egotism, but it's just instead of the personal ego, it's the...
Group identification.
I'm sorry?
Group identification.
Yeah, it's a group. It's a collective.
McDonald's.
Yeah, it's a collective phenomenon. Now, I'm not against the Olympics per se. I don't really care. You know, like, so all right, so there's nothing wrong with the idea itself. You know, first for the secular world. Well, let them get together. Let them compete. Whether it produces a more greater understanding and reduces more, I don't know. But what's the you know, like they want to compete. It's not, then, to the contrary, you know. What's that?
Mikdal
Bavel. Yeah, but I'm not saying there's anything bad with that. Bavel, there was no competition. Bavel was only, it's true, but Bavel was where it reached the point of complete unity, right?
Right.
To the extent that they rebelled against God.
Right.
And as a result of Bavel, you have the Olympics, so to speak. Because then God broke it up into smaller groups, so no one group could ever attain that type of a, you know, attitude. But I don't know. I'm just thinking about it. I know that Israel sent the team to the Olympics.
Yeah. Figure skating, I think.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, they're big in figure skating this year.
I can't hear you.
They're big in figure skating this year.
Bigger who?
They're big in figure skating.
Oh, they're big in figure skating. I have to think about it. I'm not sure if that's really justified from our point of view. That is to say, look, Lemaisa, we don't have anything to say. It's a secular country. The question would be, is there a problem with that? You hear what I'm saying, guys?
Yeah.
Let's assume now that this, you know, it's not going to happen, but let's assume the government... turn to the Torah authorities and ask the Shiloh, which is hopefully what a Jewish state would do, but it's not really Jewish, it's secular, and said, is there anything wrong, anything inappropriate about participating in the Olympics? Now, what would God's Torah have to say? Let's eliminate all the priesthood factors and the dancing and the figure skating. Let's assume that those weren't issues. Just in like, you know...
It's not their chiba, come on.
I can't hear you, what? That's where
Kippa. It's just professional.
I'm not kidding you. I don't know if I always think.
The touching and figure skating, it's just professional, right, man?
Okay, let's talk about the skiing, the bobsledding, whatever it is. You know, where there could be any issue of priesthood, okay? So let's leave that out. Just those competitions which would not be a problem of priesthood
right,
at all.
Skiing, uniforms, the whole thing. Right, okay.
That's what, obviously, I mean, I want to eliminate those other factors because I want to focus on the essence. So what would you say? Let's assume, you know, should Israel participate?
So no.
Yeah, I maintain no. I haven't given it much thought until now because it seems trivial. But in light of what we're saying, no, because it's a certain statement. Every country there is going out for the glorification of itself. That's what they want, the glory, the gold. And the glorification is that it's our ego, and there's two things that are wrong with it. Because first of all, we don't find any glory in these types of activities. And there's two things that are philosophically wrong with it. I mean, I'm not opposed to it for the United States, you know, like, because to me it's like a harmless thing. So you watch sports, so fine. Yeah, but that's okay for the Goyim. Because that's what they are. That's all any nation is. It's just the whole essence of the nation is a certain collective egotistical phenomenon. Now, as long as they're operating peacefully and they're trying to advance civilization, so fine. Nothing wrong with it. But there's no Kedusha. But a Mamlechus Kohan of a Gai Kadosh is completely different. We're not a nation. We're not putting together a state and a government for the sake of the same thing. It's another glorification, another ego thing. There's two things that are wrong with it. Because first of all, the expression of human greatness is through these kinds of activities, which are not the essence of man. It really represents the instinctual part of man, even though it involves tremendous skills. And as I said, there's nothing wrong with it, but that's not what we view as the ideal. So the fact, however, is that this is a glorification, just like the Hellenism, the Greeks. This is a glorification of man in terms of his being not a Tzelem Elokim. There's no Tzelem Elokim in this, in terms of his ability to do these physical activities, which in and of themselves have no real purpose, other than the fact that they require tremendous skill. So what? And secondly, the Kiyum, what's the Kiyum? The Kiyum is to indulge in a certain feeling of greatness. That you are a great people, so it's a glorification of the human ego, which is completely alien to Klal Yisrael. So I would say, if we had a Torah state that was living in accordance to Torah principles, I would not permit participating in this kind of thing. It's a falsification of the Jewish people. You think there's two things. Certain things are wrong. Okay, so they're wrong. But then there's certain things that are not just wrong, but they're fundamental falsifications of what the Jewish people is, of what Klal Yisrael is, and Klal Yisrael is a very important thing. I mean, I don't think this stuff would be too popular today. That, I think, is connected. If you could understand that, you can understand the issues of counting. Because counting, once you're counting, you're changing the very definition of what this zebra is. This is not a zebra that can be counted. France, they count. Because this is us, and we want to know how strong we are. Or we want to know how many we have. And the only one that can count is the Balabas. And the Balabas is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So all the countings can only be initiated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Secondly, and related to this, is that counting puts you in a very dangerous position. It puts you in the position of maintaining that there's an idea of Kochi V'Otam Yadi. That somehow or other, Klal Yisrael, if we had enough people, if we could rise... I mean, you see, by the way, that's Kiyatam Ma'at Mikol Amim. That it's not by accident that the Jewish people was always intended to be small. Because this is definitely a part of it. But if that could be changed, and you could have Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, you can get 50 million people to be Jewish. So you say, wow, look at this. There are 50 million Jews living in Israel. Let's see somebody try and attack us now. That would be the greatest disaster. Because you would say that Klal Yisrael is a physical phenomenon. And that itself is Hafaras HaBris. And that's why it's so serious. And that's why it warrants a punishment. Because that mentality will bring about the complete destruction of Klal Yisrael. So I think that those are the ideas. Those are the two ideas that I was able to elucidate in terms of the problem of counting. Okay? Any points, guys?
So, numbers always provide security, right? A person always finds safety in numbers.
That's right. And Klal Yisrael can't find safety in numbers.
Right. But it comes out from what you're saying that, in other words, this idea that a person should not look at the number of Klal Yisrael as being their security.
Right.
Right. So using a shinoi in your count is only going to help you if you're cognizant of this idea. But if you
now he went a little too fast, and I.
I'm sorry. Using a shinoi in your count is only going to help you if you're cognizant of this idea, and that's why you're doing the shinoi.
Okay, obviously.
If it's just like most people do, where you're doing the shinoi simply because you're afraid to count people directly because of ayin hara.
Yeah, well, you're tapping. That's a whole other issue, but you have that in so many other things. Unfortunately, you're describing the phenomenon that we have, that the Jews take things literally, and they have all these ideas, and this is just another case where how many Jews believe literally in the ayin hara, and they wear a red band around that. I mean, so true. But why are you asking it over here? I'm explaining it to you
right.
In a manner of chachma, well, you know, where there's an idea and a concept.
I'm
now,
asking
the fact that every Jew, you know, most Jews don't do it that way, but that's a question you can ask on anything where you lose the day.
I'm not asking a kasha.
I'm sorry?
I'm not asking a kasha.
Oh, okay.
The other thing is the story in Yemei Dovid is interesting.
Is what?
The story in the Yemei Dovid.
Is what?
Is interesting. Because
yeah.
What happened over there, you know, was that I think Yoav told him not to do it. He said, don't count Bnei Yisrael.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Apparently he was referring to this issue.
Of course.
You know, and David said, David prevailed him to do it. Right? And then the Mogeva started. And it stopped when David did a tshuva. He did a tshuva to Hashem.
Right.
And that's when it stopped.
Right.
He corrected his emotion, which came out in the count originally. When he corrected it, that's what stopped him again.
Isn't that the case though, where God gave him a choice, three choices, or is that?
No, that's somewhere else, I think.
Oh, that was a different trait.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's somewhere else.
All right. Yes, yeah, so that makes sense. Now, right. Unfortunately, the Klal is going to suffer because. You know, when someone like David, when someone who's a leader, who's in that capacity, who has the ability to bring about this deviation because of his position, so, yeah, when he corrects himself and he returns to the correct idea, so then the Magefa ends.
It's not just a flaw in him, but when a king does a count, so that makes the entire nation start concentrating on its number. In other words,
you're going too fast, I'm not following you.
Oh, sorry. When we do a count, like let's say a census in this country, everyone in the country starts focusing on their numbers.
Yeah.
So it could be that, in other words, that makes the whole country start focusing on...
Yeah, there's no question about it. I agree. Yeah, you see that. I mean, that's a big thing. How many people in America? How many Frenchmen? I mean, is it 50 million, so they're a medium power. 150 million, they're a superpower. I mean, that's the way the whole world is.
So that could be why they were punished, all of them, because they were involved in this law.
That's an additional idea, but I mean, you know, that's true. But I'm not going to go too specific on that. Because, again, they're dealing with, you know, Chavionish. I mean, they're dealing with issues of how when God punishes, and you can give general ideas, but I don't think we can. You're right. It has an effect upon the nation, and perhaps, but that's true too. The point. Even if you didn't have that idea, I don't know. You know, still there are certain. There's no question that there are certain times when there's a tzibur and the whole tzibur suffers. Because of the corruptions of a few. I mean, let's take a look at the ego. How many Jews actually worship the ego? It was 2,000. I don't have the exact number right now. But because of that, God was prepared to wipe out the whole Jewish people. But what about the ones that didn't go along with it? I mean, you could say, well, they should have stopped it, this, that. Yeah, you know, you could say, and you could say they were affected by it. But still, at all, I mean, I don't know if that answer covers everything. I don't know if that covers everything, and I don't know if you have to, because we don't know the scales of justice and how God decides. When God is dealing with an individual, so it's an individual. So it goes, you'd assume it's pretty much by his merits. But when you're dealing with a tzibur, it's a different calculation. You don't know the calculus of God. The truth is we don't even know the calculus of God with regard to the individual. That's what the Rambam says in Tshuva. I think it's Perek Gimel. you know, God warm counts off the schlios against the...
Right, nobody knows the way.
Yeah, but exactly, but you don't know how it works. Well, it could be one schlios that counts as many chavos. Because, you know, we're just looking at it superficially. So, that's why, I mean, what you're saying is correct. And you should look at it that way. It's a good observation. But I wouldn't use it as a, now I can give the answer and I can explain why, you know, all the factors as to why this happens. I wouldn't approach it that way. Okay, guys?